The King of Rock here on the Hoopball Kings cast. We appreciate you so much for being with us. I'm Damon Barling, along with your host of the show and my partner in crime, Jill Adge. Jill, I feel like so much has happened since our last episode, and it's been difficult to squeeze in episodes of the podcast because there's been so many games as they just played last night, and they've got to play again tomorrow. And I'm saying this all on Tuesday, January 12th, so it all kind of depends on when you listen to this, but they just beat the Pacers. They got the Blazers coming up, and they lost to the Blazers, you know, during this week that we haven't spoken to each other, at least here on the podcast form. But people are feeling good because a two-game losing streak in which the Kings were absolutely blown out the water in both games. I think it was a combined 48 points, 21 and 27, if I remember correctly. The ship has been righted.
Around there, yes.
An emphatic De'Aaron Fox dunk and a couple of defensive plays, and the Kings get back, get one in the win column by beating the Pacers. And, you know, so here we are. Basketball doesn't stop. Well, it does.
No, it does.
We've learned it does stop well, in some cities. Hopefully it doesn't stop in Sacramento, and hopefully this stoppage doesn't become widespread, as we've seen the Celtics miss a couple of games. But
And then they just announced another postponement for Thursday, so now they're even canceling out multiple days in advance.
Well,
the Wizards and another one, because the Wizards don't have enough.
Yeah, Wizards don't have enough, and I think there's already concern that Boston's game Friday is going to be canceled. So they canceled.
I'm trying to understand how they thought bringing in two strangers, a player, into their hotel room would ever come out with anything but this.
We're just not the sharpest society in the world, man. We're just not the brightest group right now, and we have just kind of thrown it all, like, to hell with it. We'll figure it out later. And this is what you get.
You have to wear masks on the court, you know, and fining coaches for wearing their masks wrong. Totally get it. Fine. Guys can't touch elbows or hands, but go ahead and bring two strangers to your room. No problem. Like,
I love the, mind-boggling. I love the no dap between free throws, because it's like, y'all know, like, they're playing with one ball, right? Like, it's like, are you going to, like, what are you going to do? You're going to switch out? You're going to have an offensive ball, a defensive ball? Like, you're going to switch out the ball after it goes through the hoop? Like, what are we talking about here? And I get it. You've got to try something, but man, it feels like I don't know about this one. I don't know about that.
I mean, it's the same way NFL was saying, oh, you know, go hit each other and, you know, spit on each other and do all that stuff, but don't hug post game.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get it on the court or on the field, but, you know, afterwards, watch out.
I love the Pacers coach last night. Is it Bjornsson? Is it Nate Bjornsson? I feel like I haven't taken 2 seconds to look up his name and make sure I'm saying it right.
Yeah. And their players love him.
He's screaming at the official with his mask off,
no,
2 inches right from his face. And the funny thing was, I noticed it right away. Like, why isn't Bjornsson wearing his mask? And he has it in his hand, and he's doing it because he's screaming at the officials. And the officials, of course, they're used to it, so they're not thinking anything of it. They're like, yeah, I'm totally used to another person screaming at me 2 inches from my face. There's nothing weird about this. When in actuality, he should have turned to him and said, fam, you can yell at me all you want to, but put your mask on or we're all going to get in trouble. And then collectively today, this is the result of everybody getting in trouble.
He even followed him down the court, too.
Right.
That's what got me noticing it, because it was like just a walking. And I'm like, I could see his whole face.
Furious. He was like, I thought Luke was bad because he can't wear his mask properly. It always seems to be like sitting on his chin somewhere or just not in the proper place. Bjornsson was like, the hell with it. I'm going to get my money's worth. I'm taking this mask off and I'm screaming. So we joke like if you're the official, do you have to regulate this? Like at the free throw line, like, hey, nope, don't you shake hands. Don't dap. Or like, do you get to distribute technical fouls if someone daps hands? Like it's a, again, I admire the attempt, but I don't envision this working out.
Minus a bubble. Like, I don't know how it does without a bubble. Or you, it was even announced that they had said they talked about 19 player rosters and then they turned it down.
Yeah.
At this point, I can't fathom, why would they have turned it down? Was it a money thing? Like, I mean, I don't know, but a few of these teams could have used two more players and they would have been able to play.
I mean, most of them are right on the cusp of that eight. Like when you go back to the, you know, the first one, Houston was right. Like they hit that marker and they hit the marker because of James Harden's nonsense. And so if you had had, and I think Jamal Crawford tweeted that after.
He did. Create a player pool.
Yeah. Yeah, like there are ways around this, and we all know, like, we don't have to pretend this is about fulfilling television contracts. It's about getting money, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's what the NBA is trying to do. It's what the NFL has done. It's what Major League Baseball is going to attempt to do this upcoming spring. So, you know, come up with a way that allows you to get, I mean, the barometer is 70. Like, you're worried about that 70 game marker because of those regional television contracts.
Yeah.
Come up with you can try to put all of these regulations in all you want, but come up with a game plan in terms of players and expanding rosters.
Right. Even if it is something like a player pool and it's like unlimited 10-day contracts or something like that to where, because you're seeing guys go in and out of contact tracing based on if you're 15 minutes next to a player for so long without a mat, like you qualify. I don't know how anybody on the court doesn't qualify at that point, but
right, exactly.
Like that's, but I mean, it has but to then be. I guess you're coming to the point where then those guys from the pool player pool are traveling, and then I don't know what's their testing protocol then of bringing new people in. It's I don't know. Expand it to 19. Let people quarantine and do whatever they have to do to be able to add the two players. And see what happens.
Maybe you don't travel all 19. Like maybe you have, okay, dude, this is your job this year. You have to pretty much stay at home. All right. You do non-essentials. And that's essentially what the NBA said today as part of their new protocol thing is don't leave your residence unless it's for team stuff or, you know, essential stuff or extraordinary circumstances. Well, for, you know, those pool players, like you travel with what, normally 15? They're those break glass in case of emergency players. You've got a jet standing by, you know, at the airport or whatever. And if something happens and you need to fly somebody out to a road trip, then you do it. Normally, you know, before you start a road trip or you start a homestand, you know, if there's a problem. And like, that's what's happening with Boston. Like Orlando didn't even leave. Like Orlando, like they knew, okay, this game's not being played Wednesday. We're not going to travel. They didn't have to leave to Orlando because Boston knew they weren't going to have enough guys to play on Wednesday night. So I think there's a way to navigate it. I wonder if there's an issue like with union dues. I wonder if there's an issue with, I wonder what is preventing this from happening.
But, and then my thing though, but that to me, the union, like you're putting the 7-8 guys that are left to go out there and play all those minutes in injury.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No concern. Like to me, that's just as important. Should be just as important. I mean, I mean, because we're seeing some guys play over 40 minutes, like consecutively, because there's 7-8 people. I mean, you saw Philadelphia, put in Mike Scott, even though they knew they had to, you know, suit him up, even though they knew he wouldn't even be able to play, but they needed just eight people in uniform.
Yeah.
So
this isn't an issue for the Sacramento Kings and their head coach, Luke Walton, as he is consistently, I mean, non-blowout situations. And the Kings, by the way, 5 wins are all in clutch time. Like they're all close games. They're not blowing anybody out. And I think they only have one clutch time loss. I think that's to Houston. First game against Houston, they lost by 3.
Yeah.
But Luke is pretty much running a 9-man rotation. And we saw it tightened up a little bit further yesterday in that, you know, Hassan Whiteside played about, you know, 10 minutes. Corey Joseph played a little bit less than he normally does. And we didn't see Belly played at all.
Talk with them. Read with them.
Sing and count with them.
Is that me? Or is that you?
Not me.
Ways you can bond with them.
I don't think so.
Strengthen their brains and bodies and protect their health. Your voice.
That's got to be you. That can't be me.
anything up. That's
the harmful effects of stress. So is California's Surgeon General.
Is that?
Oh, I pulled up the stat page.
See?
I'm like, it's not me. I don't have anything up. Yeah.
Was that the ESPN stat page? Because that ESPN is a bitch when it comes to running ads.
Two more seconds, it would have been Holmes hitting a rainbow three. My bad.
So that's what makes the podcast fun. It's free commercial there.
I was expanding the stat page, and there you go.
That happens to me so many times. Like, thankfully, I don't have that potted up while we're doing the radio show. But the ESPN stat page is an absolute pain in the ass. Yeah, but Lucas, you know, kind of he's run a pretty tight rotation this entire time. Like it's been a 9-man rotation. Again, in non-blowout situations, he's running pretty much 9 guys.
Yeah, and I've been asking this for I don't know, probably most of the season is for whatever reason, Belly is just it's not his year right now. And so yeah. I was saying, put in Glenn Robinson. You have a guy that you know that can play defense. And he can shoot the three. I know he's a little bit smaller, but to me, his athleticism and at least the defensive part of the ball would more than make up for the size difference. And we finally saw that yesterday. I don't know if it was based on a matchup thing or not, but we did see GR3 get all the minutes that I assume would have gone to Bielita.
And I love that. I'm all for GR3 minutes, particularly when they come at the expense of Nemanja Bjelica, because he really is kind of feast or famine. He's either going to be like 5 of 7 or 6 of 9 or something, or like 1 of 4. He's either going to contribute in a major way where you notice it, or he's just not at all. And he's always a liability defensively. And that's the frustrating part.
Right. And that's the thing. So when he's on offensively, like you can cover it. Right. But right now he can't hit anything. Yeah. And so it's double the punishment, essentially. Yeah.
Right. I took nothing in, you know, as we kind of dive in here to the Sacramento Kings, they beat the Indiana Pacers last night. They got the Portland Trailblazers coming up. I took nothing away from last night's game because last night's game reminded me so much of the Chicago game. You know, you're coming out of the beatdown by the Golden State Warriors. You lose by 31. You know, you come out there, hard fought victory against a backcourt that was just shooting the lights out against you. You got a couple of stops in the fourth quarter and you're able to get a win. And how did you follow that up? With a tremendous first quarter against Toronto and then 7 quarters of hell between the rest of that game and then the Portland Trailblazers game. And so I looked at this like, okay, good. You snapped the losing streak. Good. We stopped it at 2. We're not getting these 4, 5, 6 game losing streaks that we saw last year. Like, awesome. I'm with that. But as I look like forward, it's kind of like, okay, now you've got to show me something against Portland, because nothing about the game for me, Jill, was like, okay, they've corrected this or, you know, we did see a better defensive effort, but let's not pretend like they were a great defensive team yesterday. Like the Pacers shot like 49%. And
right.
Brogdon and Oladipo were shooting great again. So I didn't take a ton away from it.
Until we see it consistently, I think it's going to be almost impossible to take things away because you're just seeing it in spurts and sporadic. Which, okay, great. We know you can do it in spurts, but can you do it consistently and against good teams and bad teams?
Yeah.
I mean, that's been our biggest issue, I feel like, with this team for years, is it's you see the glimpses, but you can never get anything consistently going enough one way or the other. Well, I should say the other. We've seen a lot of bad. So that's right, but at least going good. And credit Rashawn Holmes and Harrison Barnes. I mean, those, your vets, they came out and they were ready. And Harrison Barnes is having career year all over the stat sheet right now.
He's so
and
good.
I'm happy for him because he's been an easy one for fans, you know, to go after because of his contract. And he always had that, you know, at least reputation from fan wise of, you know, being the ball hog and a ball stopper and things like that, that the ball stops moving. We're not seeing that from Harrison Barnes at all. He's finding guys on cuts. He's cutting himself. He's right. I mean, for the year, he's shooting 60% from two and almost 55% from three. Like that's nuts. I mean, can he keep it up? I don't know, but I mean, in the Kings five wins, he's been probably the biggest anchor of that. And he's getting it from wherever he wants on the court right now too. I mean, he's Euro stepping through everybody at the rim.
You know what's funny about Harrison Barnes to me is he's 28 years old. And I think sometimes people talk about him like he's 36 or like he's his career is winding down. Like what? And this is the one thing that I just sometimes don't get about fans. And it's one of the things that I sometimes don't get about being a fan and fan dialogue and fan conversations. With Harrison Barnes playing so well, you often see, oh, this is great. It's upping his trade value. Like, why would you want to trade him? Like, why would you even consider trading him? Harrison Barnes is a player I would love to see both as the man, Harrison Barnes and his wife, Brittany, and all that they've done in the community, and Harrison Barnes, the player I'd love to see in Sacramento for a long time. There's a couple of players on this roster that I would like to see around this team for a very long time, and Harrison is one of them. And I just don't get the, like, oh, he's playing great, good, we can trade him. Like, why? He's your best player. What are you going to trade him for?
For most of the time, I see that from people who want the complete dumpster fire tank because they want one of those top three picks.
But damn even it, then, Tim Maxwell. Is it? It's Tim Maxwell. Call him out by name. It's Tim Maxwell, isn't it? Is this what he's encouraging? I knew it.
I don't know if it's necessarily Tim.
I'm just kidding,
but
Tim.
There are people over there. Richard would like to see a fire sale.
I know Richard would. Richard has said as much on the show. I'm that's just not me. Like I don't know. I don't want that. And what's wild is I really like Harrison Barnes. I think Rashawn Holmes might be my favorite player in the league. I mean, like it's like Russ and Rashawn. Like they're like right next to each other. And I know Russ sucks. Like give me a break. Like I know he's not good right now. I get that. I still love Russell Westbrook, but I love Rashawn Holmes. I love his energy, his attitude. The only guy on the floor yesterday, Jill, more hype after the De'Aaron Fox dunk. The only guy more hyped than De'Aaron Fox was Rashawn Holmes.
Right next to him screaming.
So awesome. They had, like, I have a picture that I got from Getty Images. They have the exact same facial expression. You would have thought it was Rashawn Holmes that just threw down the dunk. It's so great. And you said this a second ago. Those two guys, Barnes and Holmes, they're anchors. You can count on them night after night. And I don't know if it's discounted because we're looking so closely at De'Aaron because of his contract. I don't know if it's because we're looking so closely at Bagley and we're, you know, trying to spot those signs of development, or if, you know, we're watching Tyrese Halliburton and the new prized rookie. But these guys, night in, night out, they get the job done.
They do. It's his whole family is extremely easy to love too. And his mom with the mom and dad with the we won. Yeah, and they're asking for fans to post those videos and stuff too. But I mean, these two players are often, I feel like, the forgotten guys that have been so much of the glue of keeping energy, attitudes. These guys, they don't know how to not bring 100%. And I love that about them is they don't know any other way to play besides giving everything every night. And whether it ends up being good or bad, you know, okay, most of the time it's good, so it's great, but I will never not respect a player for, you know what I mean, for going out there and bringing that night in, night out, regardless.
And
because over the years we've seen plenty of people not not do that and very apparent and open about it. So I love Glue Guys. Rashawn's another guy too, that does so many of the little things that won't get noticed. The fact that he will actually put a body on a screen. I love that about him, because so many bigs are phantom screeners and I hate it. We used to have to run lines if we did not put a body on somebody. You see such a difference when Fox or Halliburton are out there with big man that actually put a body on a screen. It makes a huge difference. So just the little things that I love that he does.
You're
a favorite.
You're using the term Glue Guys, and it reminds me of the line, like, for quarterbacks when they call someone a game manager. And it was always kind of taken as like a insult, like, Alex, oh, this Smith. Like, he's not explosive. Like, he's a game manager. Like, he'll win the game for you. He's not going to lose the game for you. He might not throw for 450 yards. But with Harrison and Rashawn, I feel like you can make an argument. You're legitimately talking about right now in this very, very young season, the team's two best players. And that's discounting De'Aaron a little bit, and I don't mean to do that. Like, De'Aaron has had a fine season. But I think the problem with De'Aaron is we're looking for what's next. Like, we're not enjoying the moment. We're waiting to see. Yeah, and it's maddening. We shouldn't do that, as I do it right now here on this podcast. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't look for what's next for De'Aaron, because he's playing very well. But you're looking to see him. Well, you know, he got the bag. He got that Big Max. What's Donovan Mitchell doing? What's Jason Tatum doing? What are Jamal Murray? What are all the other players who got that same contract that De'Aaron Fox are doing? And we're trying to measure it up against that.
On good teams.
Well, there's that.
But, I mean, they're also around very different. I mean, they also went into winning cultures and winning systems. I mean, to me, the fact that Fox has been able to do what he's done on a bad team is impressive, because we've had players that we thought would do this that haven't even been able to do what he's been able to do.
And it's funny, you read a lot of stuff leading into the season, and you still read it now, like, about De'Aaron taking the next jump. De'Aaron's going to take that next. It's like, wait a minute. He took a huge jump from year one to year two. You could say he even jumped from year two to year. How many more jumps does dude got to take? Like, where does he have to land?
Well, and I keep seeing people like, oh, until he's an all-star, until he does this. Like, it's almost impossible to be an all-star in the Western Conference if you are not a top-tier team.
Yeah.
We saw that from Boogie. I mean, it took years, way longer than what Fox has had to go through, where he was getting triple-teamed, every night, and he still was not being voted into the all-star game. I mean, every game plan is around them, and yet they're still not going to get that love. I know that people want to see him being more aggressive. I get that. And that dunk at the end of the game yesterday was a huge thing, because I feel like he can do that a lot. Like, there are multiple times during a game we see it that he could probably do it. I don't know about his legs between his injuries and his hamstrings and things like that. Mm-hmm. We've seen his minutes go up a little bit the last couple games, which is good. I know people want to see his 3-point percentage increase. That's something that will continue to be talked about.
I feel like he has been more aggressive.
Looks a lot better than it did at the beginning of the season. I will see that he's getting more leg into it, which, and instead of it being all arms, which at the beginning, he was doing that, at least at the beginning of the season. So, but again, we're still early and into the season. I did not think the Kings would be 5-6 at all going against these teams. They're exceeding what I expected, that they would be doing. I get he has the big contract, so he's the name that everyone's gonna, you know, throw the darts at, and that's the way it works when you get paid that money. Sure. But I'm not by any means disappointed in his season.
I think he's having a really good season, and I think he is being more aggressive. I like I I mean, what did you like? I think we base his aggressiveness off maybe how many times he goes to the foul line. And I thought before the year, if you get to the foul line 8 to 10 times a game, that's, of course, I would really appreciate it if De'Aaron hit like 80% of his, you know, foul shots. And he's been flirting with that number. I think he's been hovering around that number most of the season. But I feel like he's done that. Like he's been more aggressive than he has been, certainly in recent years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there are certain times where you can see it click for him. Where like, I'm going to take over this game right now. Like I'm going to be in that where I don't like, to me, you see a
I'm going to win or lose switch. This game
he
right now.
He goes a little bit quick. Like he starts getting the ball across half court a little bit quicker. Like things start moving and it's not so much of a, but I get it too. They're working, you know, in a working Halliburton and new players, and Buddy's been struggling on a shot. So they're having to work around that as well. I mean, there's other things going on.
Buddy,
so I get it.
Buddy appears to have just given up on taking a two. I feel like it was trending towards where like Buddy was shooting like 7 times in a game and 6 of them were 3, or he was making 6 shots, but he was 6 of 11 last night. He was 6 of 11 from 3. The night before, I think he took 12 shots, or the game before, I should say. I think he took 12 shots and 11 of them were threes. He was like trajecting to, he is a walking one-man Houston Rocket. Like, I am just going to shoot threes from here on out. And Buddy's game was deceitful last night because he did a lot either way. Like, if you don't like Buddy, you can use last night's game as an example as to why you don't like Buddy. If you love Buddy, you can use last night's game as an example as to why you love Buddy. Like, he did just enough in the right moments that made you love him.
Yeah, I mean, he was standing in the perfect spot when Holmes got that rebound under the basket.
Oh, my gosh.
Kind of like kicked off, and it literally rolled right to him, and he was able to step back and drain it.
What's so funny about that play is he was just lingering there. Everybody else was battling in the paint for the ball. He's just lingering there in the corner, and it's almost infuriating. Like, dude, go do something. And sure enough, grabs the ball, steps back, bang. Like, all right, we love you, buddy, but I ain't going to forget that. I ain't going to forget that you just lingered out there outside of the scrum. And, of course, right spot, right time, hits the three.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is an overcorrection from being what we considered being used poorly last year, or if this is part of their new offensive system with what they're doing. I don't know, but to me, there's got to be some sort of middle ground where, I mean, he's not, like, you're not even seeing cuts to the bat, like, do you know what I mean? Like, where it's movement and then stand in the corner or stand at the top, like, just run around the top of the three-point line, whether you're going baseline to baseline or not. But in previous years, we've seen him cutting and, you know, things like that, where it's when he's not, what the biggest thing for a shooter, when you're not making it, see the ball go in the basket, cut it.
Right.
He's done such a good job on building his body up and adding all that weight and muscle that there are some tiny twos to where, to me, it's like I don't know how you wouldn't be overpowering them trying to take them. And whether that's maybe instead of having him create the shot, can you post him up? I mean, like, are there ways that you can at least get closer and post up a little bit? But I know that doesn't necessarily work as well with our big man because they're not too much stretch wise. But to me, in his shooting slumps, I would have liked to have seen him try and get to the basket a little bit more to try and to do other things, because if he's not playing defense, right, and he's not hitting threes, it's hard. Again, it's similar to Bielitsa. It's hard to have you out there, which is why we've seen, I think, Halliburton so much. And then even at the end of games and things like that, So
Indiana went at Buddy in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Like they tried to find, they consciously made an effort to try to find who was guarding Buddy, or who Buddy was guarding, excuse me, in the fourth quarter. And they went at him. And that's what I'm concerned about, you know, moving forward. It's like, okay, if I had seen, you know, Malcolm Brogdon and Victor Oladipo had, you know, decent games, not great games, but decent games. We saw what CJ did, you know, a couple of nights ago. We saw what Zach LaVine and Coby White did a few nights before that, even in a Kings win. And these backcourts seem to be feasting off of the Sacramento Kings. And now you've got a situation where you got Dame and CJ coming back. And what does this wind up looking like for them? Particularly, you hope they're, you know, you use the word, what was the word Harrison Barnes was using? It wasn't effort.
Oh, the communication.
Yeah. He was talking about communication defensively, but there was an urgency. Urgency is the word I was looking for. Harrison Barnes was talking about there was no sense of urgency. And we talked at the beginning of the season about how much of defense can really just be put on effort. Like maybe you're not the best defender, but if you're putting in work, that the defender's going to feel you. And Luke Walton talked last night about how he thought De'Aaron set the tone for the Kings defensively and how he was working extremely hard on that side of the ball. And it kind of carried over to the rest of the team. And, you know, I look at this and go, okay, it did. It absolutely did for three quarters. And then it got to the fourth quarter and everybody was kind of watching the score like, okay, we've just got to outshoot them. And that's why we, you know, go back to how we started this podcast is I just walk away going, man, this is a team that's shot 56% in a loss. Like that is wild to me. And they gave up, you know, 48.5% shooting. And now you've got the Portland Trailblazers coming in here. And I start to look ahead at the schedule going, man, at some point they're going to have to, it's great to get a win. And I don't want to minimize what they did against the Pacers. A win is a win. You just mentioned they're 5-6. Like that's great. But what now? Like, what are you going to do against the Pacers? What are you going to do to make sure that urgency, to use that word, is there on a night-to-night basis? And Tyrese said, I can't remember if it was Tyrese or Rashawn Holmes, but one of them said, there aren't going to be too many more blowouts with the Sacramento Kings. Like, we're just not going to let that happen. And it's like, that's a hell of a proclamation. Like, that's popping your chest out. Like, you're not going to come in here and run over us like the Portland Trailblazers did, like the Toronto Raptors did. Like, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. So what do you do that? What do they have to do to make sure that sense of urgency is there?
Take it personally. Like, to me, that's my thing. When Barnes was talking, he said urgency, aggressiveness, lack of communication, and guys not taking it personal. And right. Rashawn said the same thing. I think Whiteside even threw it out there. Like, when someone's going at me, and no matter what you think about Whiteside, he said the exact correct thing, that if someone is targeting you, like you're just going to sit back and let it happen. Like it's, oh, well, here we go again. Next game. Like they're going to target me again and they're going to target me again. Like at some point you got to figure out something. And whether that's even guys communicating with each other on the court, realizing what's going on. I mean, to me, I have a hard time believing that these guys aren't noticing when players are going at certain players. I don't know what. And we have Rex in there, right? Who's been amazing as a defensive coach with every team he's been on. And my thing too is I've seen people say, okay, well, it'll be interesting to see what Rex draws up here. And I'm like, yes, but at a certain point, like no matter how many defensive coaches we're putting with these guys and seeing the same results over and over, is it time to admit that is it just not going to happen? I mean, as depressing as that is, that it's just some point, some it's not either this... don't care or they physically just can't, mentally or physically, they can't, either they can't read what's going on, you know, around them, because there's something to be said for for good individual defense and good team defense, mm-hmm. right? The Absolutely. Kings only need to be good at team defense. They don't need to be individually, you know, an all NBA defensive team. I mean, if you can just get five guys out there playing team defense,
yeah.
it would do wonders.
So let's go back to Monty McNair and talking about the players that he acquired and talking about high IQ guys, right? Like, you have to be a high IQ guy to play team defense. And I use the example of Draymond Green. You know, everybody remembers if you stuck around and watched that entire Montrosity, you saw Draymond versus Marvin Bagley, right? And every time Marvin Bagley would move, Draymond was already there. It's because Draymond studies film. Like, Draymond knows what's going to happen. Draymond knows the tendency of his players, and he also knows what players aren't going to be able to adapt to him knowing what they're going to do. You need – those are high IQ guys. Like, Rashawn Holmes to me, and this isn't a question of his IQ. Like I look at Rashawn Holmes and go, like, he's an instinctual defender. He's an effort defender. He's super athletic, and if he misses an assignment or if he's if the guy with the ball gets past him, he can recover because he's super athletic and kind of make up for it. So I think you have two different styles of defenders and two different styles of defense. And with the Kings, when I look at De'Aaron and Harrison Barnes and Rashawn Holmes, just looking at the starting lineup only, like, those are three guys who can play individual defense. Those are three guys who can be instinctual defenders. And so the fact that it's gone so wrong defensively, to me, really puts a spotlight on the other two guys in the starting lineup. And truthfully, it really puts the two guys, it really puts the rest of the roster, with the exception of Tyrese Halliburton, in the question. And Corey Joseph isn't a bad defender. So I feel like I've named half of the guys that play and have said they're not bad defenders, right. But yet this team seems to be really bad defensively.
Well, and you're seeing, like you mentioned, all the guards that have gone off. You're seeing it consistently be guards that yep. are going off and not yep. not big men that are necessarily hurting. Well, besides Boucher the other day in Toronto.
Oh, my gosh. But, he's still scoring on the Kings.
And he's having the last couple of games, he's gone off and he's played really well this year. But one thing I mentioned was that I saw that teams that had some sort of success, or at least were able to stop runs, where they threw a big-bodied man out there like Whiteside to try and at least protect the paint a little bit. We didn't do that, and I get it that there were people that felt he would have helped and hurt, and, you know, it is what it is. But that's really the only game I feel like where we've seen a big man kind of go off besides Sabonis yesterday at the beginning. But I mean, that's a typical game for.
Yeah. For Sabonis. He's so good.
I mean, you saw Rashawn had six blocks and, you know, that's part of, you know, the, what's so good about the Pacers is they can hit you from everywhere. But yeah, at some point, these guards do have to, they got to figure it. I mean, they yeah. got to figure it out. If this team ever wants to take next steps, and to me, that's just as much for Fox on taking a next step is his defense, you know, and increasing the fact that we're seeing a rookie go out there
mm-hmm.
and look that much better defensively is great to see, but it's also damn.
Yeah.
You know, that he doesn't even need all these years and you can see him figuring things out.
We have to see it collectively as the team defense that you spoke about a moment ago. We have to see it collectively, yeah. but we also have to see it individually. And if your buddy and you're targeted by a team in the fourth quarter of a close game, you know, to go back to the line that the guys were using the other, you got to take that personally. And so what are you going to do? No one questions Buddy's work ethic. You can question all you want. I mean, that dude, when it comes to being an athlete, he's damn near on the freak level. He is.
Yeah.
He's quick. He can move. So what's holding him back when Buddy wants to play great defense? He's capable. He's a capable defender. And so it's like, if I'm looking at this and I'm going back and watching that film, looking at like the Pacers are targeting me, we've got Dame and CJ coming into our house tomorrow. Okay. Okay. And I think you can go back as recently as the start of this season where you saw Buddy make great plays defensively, where you saw Buddy be, there was time. I think one of the frustrating things with Buddy this year is when you saw him being great defensively, the shot wasn't falling. Or not great. Sorry, that was a stretch. When you saw him putting in great effort on the defensive end, the shot wasn't falling. I think you're willing to excuse certain things from Buddy when the shot goes in, because when the shot goes in, he's lethal. But it's not. 100%. And like, we're 11 games in, and it's like, it's just not happening for him so far this year.
Yeah. And
I guess we can leave it at that. Like, I don't want to beat him up too much.
That's what we talked about last week was, do you try and put him in the second unit to see if that sparks something?
Yeah.
You know,
I was curious,
probably be better defensively there too.
I was curious with him with him being questionable, if you had a chance for Buddy to miss a game and put Tyrese in the starting lineup. Now, I know Tyrese started, but he started for Rashawn Holmes, and it created that kind of small ball lineup, which turned it just didn't go well. But if you had a situation where, okay, Buddy was out for a game, and you put, you know, Tyrese Halliburton in there, and you just get a look at it without creating any stuff, right, any off the court stuff, any nonsense, any drama, you just have a chance to see it. I was curious how that would turn out. Obviously, we didn't see it. Both Buddy and Rashawn were both healthy. Tyrese resumed his role on the bench. He still played 28 minutes, but I don't know.
And that tells you so much about Buddy too, is that kid hasn't missed a game. And I mean, I'm trying to remember the date they gave, but it was a long time ago. I mean, it's, you know, he puts his body on the line. Like, that's, well, you know,
but he also, in like those, you know, those still shots on Instagram, you know, that there's a correlation there. When you work that hard to keep your body in shape and you're able to stay free from injury, you know, those things aren't mutually exclusive, man. They're completely related. And I applaud Buddy for that, which leads me more into believe he's a more complete basketball player than we've seen. And I don't know what is preventing him from realizing that full capability, because I believe that he is capable.
And he has the speed. We know he has the speed. Yes, he has athleticism.
Speed, athleticism, you know, hustle. He's got it all.
And maybe a longer period, again, with these coaches and with Rex and things like that, you know, we'll start to see more of a difference. I know we barely had a training camp. They barely had any practice time. So yes, he's put in all this work and on his body, but they're also learning new philosophies and new schemes on defense and things like that, that we've seen flashes. Now, can he get there consistently? And I hope that Rex can bring that out of him. I truly do.
Gracie's ready to play. So she's got the squeaker toy in hand. She's ready to eat. So we're going to wrap up. We appreciate you for tuning in. We're working on a number of things, including, you know, a live version of the podcast and in more episodes. It's just with so many games happening one after the other, we just want to make sure that we get at least one out to you each week. And hopefully you still enjoy listening to it, because many of you are probably listening to this after the Portland game. But there's so much Kings basketball ahead. We appreciate you so much for allowing us to be a part of your Kings coverage. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. Make sure you follow at Jill Adge on social media, at Damian Barling. And we'll be with you again here very soon on the Hoopball Podcast Network.